So aside from reading Parsha Tetzaveh this week, we also read Parsha Zohar. And it occurred to me, you know, we're very machmir when it comes to, very stringent when it comes to Zohar. We, presumably, the rabbi or somebody gets up and tells everyone to be quiet and tells people to have kavanah and to say the bracha, to listen to every word. And some places read it for people to come late, and some people read it in different... in different pronunciations for different people, and next you'll find different people reading it from different Sifrei Torah. But and the reason for this is that it's claimed that if any reading of the Torah is considered to be reading on a Torah level, then this would be it. And it occurred to me that, and I don't want to say this too loud because next thing you know they'll be posting this all over Geula and Bnei Brak, but it occurred to me that if this is an obligation of Torah reading, it's not enough just to hear it. One should also understand it, right? I mean, presumably the purpose of reading is to understand it, and then we can, again, as I said, if you want, we can spread this around, and it will spread, that you're not Yotzi Parshat Zoch if you don't understand what's being read.
But then we're all going to be in good shape next week after the
Shiur. Well, maybe. There's two Parshat Zachars, but let's start. There's two Parshat Zachars. I say that because the reality is there's only one. And the one is what we read from Parshat Ki Teitzei. We read Parshat Zachar, we read Parshat Ki Teitzei, we read that from Devarim. On the other hand, there is another section of the Torah that deals with the war of Amalek. Actually, the other one deals with the war of Amalek real time. That's when the war is taking place, and that was back in Bishalach. And a matter of fact, there is an opinion that, especially in leap years, and I have to move back a second. Why do we read it? If there's a mitzvah, remember what happened to Amalek, why read it once a year? Maybe read it once a day, maybe once a week, maybe once a month, maybe, meaning who decided that once a year should be the period of time that one fulfills the commandment? And there is a teaching that after 12 months, one tends to forget something, and specifically 12 months. So if it is 12 months, then what happens in a leap year? In a leap year, then we read Parshat Zachar in the 13th month. So there are those who say, okay, it's going to take a 13th month, so therefore have in mind to be Yotze when we read it in Bishalach. Or for that matter, also Purim morning, but okay, I'm not going to get into that now. So there are two Parshat Zachars where, again, the war as described in Bishalach and then the commandment as described in Ki Teitzei, there's a lot of overlap, and there's also a lot of, I don't want to call it contradiction because I don't think that's fair, but there's a lot of non-overlap, which means there's a lot of information which is one which is not the other, which really means that if we want to understand Parshat Zachar, we really need to read the two of them together. On top of all that, each section has at least one word, or maybe a phrase, which can easily be understood two ways, and in fact has been understood in two ways, and as I get to it, we'll take note. So let's take a look first at the war itself, and then the recap. The war itself is in the first verse, and if you noticed, I decided to give you not just the words, I also gave you what's called the trup, and that is how to read the Torah itself, because I think that may help us in terms of interpretation. And you'll see. Vayavo Amalek. Amalek came. What don't we know? Where they came from, why they came, what the purpose of this was. Vilachem im Yisrael b'Refidim. And they started a war with Israel in Refidim. So then the question would also be, why Refidim? Why now? Why here? What the motivation is. Vayomer Moshe el Yehoshua, and then the question would be, why specifically Yehoshua? Because I probably won't get to it otherwise. Look at the Or HaChaim in source 21. Why Yehoshua? Vayomer Moshe el Yehoshua, nitchakem Moshe, kishihikir ha'avon, shehu litzad bitul milchemet ha'Torah. Now, what is he talking about, milchemet ha'Torah here? Because Rifidim, the Gemara understands, that their hands were loose from having studied Torah. That by Mara, the Jews received Torah, Shamsam Lachokom Mishpat, and by Refidim, the Jews already stopped being involved in it. And again, there is a problem by Mara, because by Mara, it says in the Chumash, Shamsam Lachokom Mishpat. Their God, their Moshe did give the people some kind of Torah. So by it, how long did it take for them to stop being involved in it? By Refidim. By Refidim, they already weren't involved in the Torah. Once they weren't involved in the Torah, that's where the complaints came, and that's where they complained about water. So that's the background of what the Orach Chaim is saying here. And then he continues and he says, Nitchatem Moshe kishit kir ha'avon shulotzad bitul mechemet ha'Torah. The reason why they were attacked is because they were not involved in the war of Torah. Now, of course, those of you who may have missed this, there is a huge tension that's going on in Israel right now in terms of Shavyon Benetel and so on. Who should be fighting, who shouldn't be fighting, and there are those who claim that everyone should be fighting, and those who claim that no. Those who learn, they're the ones who actually protect the country, because it's the learning that protects the country. So over here, Moshe understood that the reason Amalek attacks is because the Jews weren't learning enough. So therefore, what should the response then be? What should the response then be? So then you need to learn more, which means, I don't know who you send out to war then, but listen to what the Orach Chaim says. Shulzad bitul milchemet ha-Torah. Amar ein re'ui letzeit le-milchama elu Yehoshua shenemar alav. So therefore, who should go out? Yehoshua should go out. Why? Because it says, lo yamish b'toch ha'ol be'esek ha-Torah. Source 21. Because why should Yehoshua go out? Because he was the best student of Moshe, and he's the one who learned the most. Which means he's the one who has the most schut when he goes out, because he never stopped learning. So who should go out to war? The ones who learn the most. That's what the Orach Chaim says over here. Ha'o be'esek ha'Torah v'omer lo shivchar ki yotzei bo uvizeit barla v'kach haya. So who should you take out to fight? Those who learn the best and those who learn the most, those who hardly ever stop learning, those are the ones you should take out to war with you, and that will protect the people. So anyway, I thought you would like this Orach Chaim.
I love it.
As I said, I thought you would enjoy this, but it really doesn't fit into anything else I'm going to say today. So let's go back to the first source. He chooses Yehoshua, and of course you have to ask why Yehoshua. Vayomer Moshe el Yehoshua, we're back in source 1, Posuk Tet. Vayomer Moshe el Yehoshua, and notice, by the way, his name is already called Yehoshua here. Even though we're told by Meraglim his name wasn't always, lo and behold, he's called Yehoshua here. And Moshe says to Yehoshua, Bechar lanu anashim, it's not Bechar Becha, lanu, we're involved in this together. Bechar lanu anashim vitzei, okay, what exactly vitzei means, if it's just a turn of phrase, go out to war, or vitzei means something else. We'll see that Chazal interpret this tzei, this go out. Tzei hi lochem ba'amalek, go out and fight with Amalek. Machar enochi nitzav arosha giv'ah, u'matei elokim b'yadi. Tomorrow I'm going to go up to the hill and the staff of God will be with me. Of course, why the staff of God? Why go up on the hill? And the biggest question is, machar, why tomorrow? Now, the whole reason I gave you the fonts over here with the trup was because of this word machar. Because is the word so is the word machar really connected to Yehoshua, or is the word machar connected to Moshe's actions, or both? When you see the trup, there's really no question. And that's why I'm reading it deliberately. The first time I copied the text for you, it didn't have the trup to it, so therefore there was much more room for your own interpretation or confusion. But over here it says, "Bachar l'noshim v'tzei hilachem b'malek." Go out and fight a malek, without any kind of limitation or instruction as to when. Machar enochi netzev arosh ha'giva. And then tomorrow I'm going to go up. Now you understand, someone could have read this v'tzei hilachem b'malek machar. Go and fight Amalek, machar. The only problem is, you see under the lamed of Amalek, you see this half moon upside down with this little thing on top? That's called an etnachta. You have within the trump, you have two types of stops. You have a sof pasuk, which is equivalent to a period, and then you have this thing, which is in almost every pasuk, and that's where you get to, I would say, a full pause. It's like, I would say it's half, it's the first half of the pasuk. It doesn't make a difference of length of the pasuk. So over here, having the nachta there clearly tells you that that is where you start. Look at the first pasuk. Vayavo malek, and a malek came. So you see the thing there also. That's where you stop. That's a very good question, which I can't answer. As everything else, it's machloket as to when these things came in. Some will claim it was halacha Moshe Mesinai. Some will claim that it was done at a later point in time. But you look at source 17 now, for a second. Isi ben Yehuda Omer. Isi ben Yehuda said, now this is Mechilta. Mechilta is an ancient source, right? Mechilta is from the same time, more or less, as the Mishnah. Isi ben Yehuda Omer, chamishad varim yesh, she'en lahem b'torah hachra. There are five instances where there is no hachra. What does hachra mean? There's no final decision which way to read it. And he gives the list of what the five are. One of them is, machar, anochi, nitzev, arosh, agiv'ah. O, say hilachem b'amalek, machar. Which means over here, the mechilta is ignoring our etnachta and is saying, no, there's two. There, not only are there two ways of reading this, he says there's two legitimate ways of reading it. Not only to say there's two legitimate ways of reading it, he says there's no hachra'a. Now, of course, the only problem with this, that in our chumashim, there is a hachra'a. In our chumashim, the etnachta is placed beforehand, so therefore the way that we read it is, again, say, v'tzei hilachem b'malek, and then, machar enochi nitzev arosh agiva. But we see over here is that Isi ben Yehuda is telling us that no, this verse could be read in either way, and that means reading it, that Moshe is telling Yehoshua to go and wait till tomorrow, is just as legit. And by the way, I know that this is difficult to say. I said it's either Yeshua or Moshe or both. And saying this is dangling, right? In between the two, it's someplace, you know, sitting on the fence between Yeshua go out, Moshe go up, and both of these things are to take place tomorrow. Okay, most likely the 9th century. In the Mechilta, most likely we're put in the 9th century, and I would assume that there was a Torah Shabbat. Again, some say that it was then written, some say there was a Torah Shabbat beforehand as well. But as you see, many verses, you can't read the verse unless you know the sentence structure. So over here, Isi ben Yehuda is telling us is that this machar is an undecided word, and it's undecided where it goes. By the way, when I said, Now, fortunately, this is not the real Parshat Zachar, but if it were, it would then be impossible for us to know what the meaning is, because ein hachra'a. Im ein hachra'a, there's no decision being given, then we just don't know what it means. So did Moshe tell Yeshua to go out immediately and fight? Well, did they fight that day? Did Moshe tell him to wait till the next day to go out and fight? Moshe seems to be, goes out on the up on the hill the next day, but then you'd have a question. If he's going to fight now, why going out the next day? Okay, have I confused you enough, or more? Umatei Elokim biyadi, and the staff of God in my hands. So why at this particular juncture does Moshe take the staff with him? I don't believe the staff is used again the rest of Sefer Shemot. Am I right about that? Yeah. I don't believe the staff is used again in Shemot. I don't believe it's used in Vayikra. I don't believe that Moshe's staff is used again at all. I think this is it. That's before. So the only time is when he hits the rock later on at the end of 40 years. So what does he use to hit the rock at that particular point? And by Korach, so there I was thinking. I think it's more Yosh. I think it's Aaron's. Yes, so there's two different staffs also going along the way, which you also need to pay attention to. Okay. And the interesting thing about hitting the rock over there, the hitting the rock that you referred to in Chukat, the later one, is basically a repetition of the hitting the rock over here. And where does the hitting the rock take place over here? The verse before this. It's right before the story of Amalek is where the hitting the rock, and then you'd have to start asking to hold it. is there some kind of connection here anyway between the hitting of the rock and this episode? So. Correct, clearly, and magical. Vayas Yoshua, Pasuk Yud, Vayas Yoshua kasher amar lo Moshe li lachem b'malek, and Yeshua did as Moshe said, u'Moshe Aaron v'chur alu rosh ha'giv'a. Moshe Aaron and Chur went up to the mountain. And as we've already mentioned a number of times, that was Pasuk Yud in Source 1, the combination of Moshe Aaron and Chur is Moshe, who is the present leader, Aaron, the man who will become the Kohen Gadol, and Hur comes from the tribe of Yehuda, and I can call him the prototype of the Melech, and he's the man who would be king. Of course, he never does become king. Vayakashe yarim Moshe yado v'gavar Yisrael. Moshe lifts up his arms. By the way, is it his arm or is it the staff? Is his arm in that hand, or is the staff in that hand, or in the other hand? When Moshe lifts up his hand, yado is plural or singular? V'gavar Yisrael, v'kasher yaniach yado, v'gavar Amalek. When he put his arm down, then Amalek was winning. V'dei Moshe kvedim, Moshe's arms were heavy. V'yichu even, so it's interesting that an even now is used. And v'yasimu tachta v'yeshev aleha, and he sits on it. V'aron v'chur tamchu b'yadav, they support Moshe. Both arms they support. Mize echad. V'yiyadav emuna ad bo ha-shemesh. And Moshe's hands are emuna. What does emuna mean over here? Until the sun comes or the sun sets? V'yachlosh Yehoshua et Amalek. And Yehoshua weakens Amalek. V'et amo l'ficharev. With the sword. V'yomer Hashem. And it's interesting. Amalek v'et amo. Wasn't this one of the same? And then the conclusion, God speaks. And by the way, if you've noticed, God has not spoken till this point. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, k'tov zot zikaron b'sefer. Write this as a memorial in a book. V'sim be'ozne Yehoshua. V'sim be'ozne Yehoshua. And put this in the ears of Yehoshua. Now, it's also very interesting why Yehoshua again. Ki mocho emche et zecher amalech mitachad ha-shamayim. What does ki mocho emche mean? I will wipe out Amalek. Zecher amalech mitachad ha-shamayim. V'yiven Moshe mizbeach, Moshe built an altar. V'yikroshmo Hashem nisi, and called it the miracle of God. V'yomer, and he said, ki yad al kes ka milchama la Hashem Ba'amalek midor. The war of God against Amalek is from generation to generation. So now, keeping in mind everything we just now read, and there's things that were clear about, things we're not clear about, things that we noticed, things that maybe we didn't notice, but hopefully we noticed more than we didn't notice. And now let's look at the second source, which is the proper Parshat Zohar, which is the one that we will read in Shul on Shabbat. Zohar Eight Asher Asa Lecha Amalek. And by the way, for all those who are so careful about reading it, Israelis cannot say the word eight. Israelis do not say eight. Israelis say et. Don't ask me why, but you'll pay attention. They'll be so careful how many times they'll read the word Zecher, right? But you'll let me know afterwards if they actually say Zachar Eight Asher Asa Lecha Amalek, or they say Zachar Et Asa Lecha. I'm just pointing out what it says. Zachor. Oh, no. Zachor eit asher asa lecha Amalek. Remember what Amalek did to you. B'derech b'tzeitchem mimitzrayim. On the way when you left Egypt. Now, that's a very interesting way of describing it. Because I could have, by the way, that's lacking over here in the description. It's only when it's a more global description. I could have said it happened by Refidim, the same way that it says it over here. I could have also said it happened on the way to Har Sinai. Right, so it's interesting that it calls it Pederech B'tzeitchem Mitzrayim. So over here, the context that it's trying to take us back to is that this is the context of having left Egypt. That seems to be the major context, which, by the way, may go back to issues of motivation. Asher korcha baderech. Now, the word korcha baderech, the word korcha is very challenging, because the word korcha, the easiest way of translating this is they happened upon you along the way, which gives the indication of a coincidence, that it's something that it was not premeditated, it was not something which was planned out. They happened upon you along the way. It sounds as if, you know, you can have a certain type of crime where a person, they case, you know, who their victim will be, they prepare, they look into it, and so on, they carefully pick their victim. Over here, it seems to be more like a random crime that took place on the road. Asher korcha baderech, that's the impression that, excuse me? That's the impression that we get. V'yizanev b'cha kol hanechashalim acharecha v'ata ayef v'yageya. Now, that is actually a very challenging, still, it's part of the verse. Asher korcha bederech, they happened upon the way, v'yizanev b'cha, what does that mean? Well, the word zanev, it literally means tail. What? V'yizanev b'cha kol hanechashalim acharecha. So nechashalim, you're saying, is all the weak. Of course, if it really meant weak, what should have it said? Okay, nechalashim, right? So it's also interesting, nechashalim, right? It's that almost like your mind can play games with you. But it, right? No, but it should have said chalash. Nechashalim acharecha, v'ata ayef v'yageya, which is also a very interesting statement. And you were tired, and you were exhausted. V'lo yirei Elohim, or lo yirei Elohim, and did not fear God. Weak. V'lo yirei Elohim, and did not fear God. Now, this is a problem. Who didn't fear God? Is it Amalek didn't fear God, and that's why Amalek is attacking you? Can anybody lend support to that approach? Of course you can lend support to that approach. What? Well, no, va'ata ayef v'yageya. No, ata ayef v'yageya. Ata v'lo yirei Elohim is a dangling, that's what you would call this, a dangling? Okay. It's a dangling something over here. V'lo yirei, is it lo yirei or lo yira? Yeah. Yeah, so who had the lack of fear of God? So once again, you have to say that there's two ways that you could read it. V'lo yorei Elohim, right, correct. I don't know where the two dots disappear to, and I tried so hard here to get you this correctly. So by the way, this will make a big difference. If you have to understand the verse, so who is it a lack of fear of God? Was it Amalek who had a lack of fear of God, or is it the Jews who had a lack of fear of God? And by the way, there is no question in the world that the proper word and reading here is Zecher Amalek and not Zecher Amalek. No question whatsoever, even though that there are people who claim there's a question.
The fact that it says that they went out of Egypt, maybe it's because just to give a picture of how weak and how this, if they had said they're going to Sinai, you wouldn't have the same impression of the people as when they left Egypt, they almost came in and they were.
That's nice. There's four possibilities off the top of my head that I could have said. One of them you'll find is an absurdity, which is why you wouldn't have suggested it. One is left Egypt. One is was approaching Har Sinai. The third is where they actually were in Rephidim. And the fourth was before they entered the land of Israel. And the reason you wouldn't have suggested that is because they're not about to enter the land of Israel, except for one thing. Amalek may not know that. I mean, it wasn't that the plan to begin with anyway. Okay, so let's now look at some of the commentaries and see what they may do for us. Chizkuni says in source number 3, and this is commenting in Beshalach, V'ilachem im Yisroel mnei sinat mechirat habechora, avo mikodim lachem nityar'u lihizdaveg aleihem, shelo yeh mutal lehem pri ashtar hachov, shova avdum v'inu otam 400 shana. Amalek comes from Esav. The hatred, therefore, of Amalek for the Jews is an extension of the hatred of Esav for Yaakov. The hatred of Esav for Yaakov, over here, the Chizkuni is saying, goes back to the sale of the Bechorah, which, by the way, is perhaps a little strange. And the reason I say that is that when Esav actually sells the Bechorah, he seems to be quite content with it. He says, "Vayivez Esav et Bechorah," bless you. He detested the Bechorah. Doesn't sound... Later he complains that twice he took advantage of it, but it doesn't sound at the point that Esav is upset. Now, what presumably according to the Chizkuni, what we would then say, because Chizkuni over here gives a very important interpretation. What was the Bechorah? The Bechorah had within it two elements to it. The Bechorah included within it the covenant that God makes with Avraham by the Brit Bein HaBetarim. So what are the two elements? V'ivdu v'inu otam 400 shana, you're going to be enslaved for 400 years. And what's the second part of it? The second part of it is then you're going to come back to the land of Israel and you're going to inherit the land of Israel. So why, according to the Chizkuni, does Amalek attack them now? Because the 400 years is already fulfilled. Which means Amalek does not want that part of the deal. If they would have killed Yaakov all the way back, then they would have had to work the 400 years themselves in order to get land of Israel. But now they're being very clever. Okay, you already paid the debt back, so now I can now inherit the land of Israel. And that's what their thinking is. So again, let's read the Chizkuni again. V'lechem Yisroel mifnei sinat mechirat habechorah. It goes back to the sale. Avo mikodem lechein nityaru. Before they were afraid, lizdaveg aleihem, they're afraid to mix up with the Jews. Shelo yeh mutal aleihem priat shtar hachov, to pay the debt. Shel, what debt? V'avdum v'inu otam 400 shana. They were not willing to pay that price. What do they want? Now, he didn't say the words land of Israel right now, but again, you can just go look at the source 4, the Dazakain Balei Tosfot, Vayaveh Amalek, Tama, Loma Icher li Lachem Yisrael Ad Achshav, Velo Ba Miyad Sher Yidul Mitzrayim Shalayu Ki Im Shivim Nefesh. Why fight them now? It would have been strategically advantageous to fight them when they were only 70 people. Why wait for them to become a huge nation and then Yeshlomo Sha'amu Lo Kadosh Baruch Hu La'Avram Ve'ivdum Ve'inu Otam U'Kishemet Avinu Avram Alav Hashem Hitil Hachov Al Yitzchak. God says they're going to be enslaved, and he gives this over to Yitzchak. U'Kishemet Yitzchak U'Til Al Yaakov U'Banav Ve'esov U'Banav Ve'amar Amalek HaRasha Belibo Im Achritet Yaakov V'Zaro. If I wipe out Yaakov and his children, Yehachov Mutal Alai, I'm then going to have to pay this debt of the covenant that God made with Avram. Therefore, he said, I'm going to wait till they leave Egypt. And then he's going to come to fight. So over here, so the timing over here, again, where does the Chizkuni and the Datzakim get it from? They get it, again, they're both explaining the Pasuk in Beshalach. Where do they get it from? They get it from the Pasuk in Devarim. Why? B'derech b'tzeit chavim Mitzrayim. That when the Jews leave Egypt, that's when they go after. Again, neither of them told us that they're focusing on the word leaving Egypt, but once you read their commentaries, you realize that's where they're getting it from. They're getting it from that specifically it says, when does Amalek attack you? When you left Egypt. Why leaving Egypt? Because they did not want the slavery. Good? Clear? Yes. Correct.
Or unless it was incidental, they just happened to see the Am that they hated.
Right. The Korcha is still interesting to us. Kliyakar, Kacha Molek, really, this is in the middle of the sentence, Kol Zman Shehoi Yisro Shleimim Im Hashem, V'yahagam Shalom Beinehim, Az Lo Yochal Lehim Klal. That Amalek realized that whenever the Jews are united, they will not be able to defeat them. V'kasher ra'ah utam b'masa'u mirivah, ariv b'nei Yisrael, she'ya mirivah b'neihim, ki kol hachanayot shekodim atan Torah kulam yabita aramot u'machloket. That specifically, if you look at the verses which immediately precede the episode over here with Amalek, the Jews fight with Moshe. Where are we going to drink? What are we going to do? And the last verse, right before Vayavo Amalek, says, this is Perek Yud Zayin Pasuk Zayin, Vayikra Shem HaMakom Masa Umiriva, Al Riv B'nei Yisrael, Va'al Nasotam, you know, they tested God, which is interesting, because what does Moshe call the place? Hashem Nisi. Nisi could be the miracle, it can also mean test. I translate before his miracle. Va'al nasotam et Hashem lemor. They tested God by saying, Hayesh Hashem birkirbenu am ayin. Is God with us or God not with us? Does God exist or does God not exist? Is there a God who directs and micromanages? Or is there a God even who macromanages? Or is there no God whatsoever and is everything coincidence?
This is in Shemot.
Or is everything coincidence? Now, what are the words immediately after they say Hayesh Hashem b'kibeinu mayim, is God with us or not? Vayavo Amalek, which means when Jews begin to question the existence of God, what happens afterwards? Then Amalek comes. By the way, Amalek presumably feels that everything is left to chance. Meaning there is no hashkacha, there is no God micro or macro managing. So therefore, Asher korcha baderech becomes a much more interesting phrase, which means when you begin to act like Amalek, where things are happenstance, right, then Amalek happens to come upon you. No, which means this is really a response to our behavior. And again, with Purim coming, you realize Haman's putting everything to chance and doing a goral and leaving everything to chance is also going to be connected to the same type of Amalek philosophy. Ah, and if that's the case, Lo Yirei Elokim did not fear God, exactly. Now we read that in Devarim, but we have information back in Shemot, where immediately before that there was a lack of fear of God. So now you realize that you could have read this, Lo Yirei Elokim refers to the Jew. I tell you, Ayef V'Yageya V'Lo Yirei Elokim. And when you're not Yirei Elokim, then the situation is ripe for Amalek to come. Shuli? So you certainly see the Kli Yakar is not willing to say that it was that it was happenstance. So our Korcha B'Derech may actually refer to our worldview at that point. Yesh Elokim B'Kirbeinu Ma'ayim, is God with us or not? And then Vayavo Amalek. So again, what I'm pointing out, and I haven't said this clearly yet, there's the specific verses both in Bishalach, both in Shemot and in Devarim, and then there's the larger contexts. And of course, now what all of you should be thinking, okay, what's the larger context in Devarim? What happens immediately in Devarim prior to the verses that we're reading over here, and why is that being introduced at that point? So I'm still holding that up my sleeve, but at least you'll know that's a good question. Yeah. Correct. So did we finish the Kli Yakar or? Yeah, we got till the three dots there. V'chein Haman, Sheba Mizera Amalek, Ba'a Yisrael B'ta'anot Elu Ba'omro. Again, the Jews divided. Where does he say that? Yeshno Am Echad Mifuzar Mufurad. Dahayin Mufuzar Ishmerer Mufurad Minashchina. So therefore, the claim of Haman is exactly that, that the Jews are divided among themselves, and they're divided by from God, and that's what makes them susceptible. And therefore, the Rav Shlomo HaLevi Alkovitz, the author of the Lecha Dodi, in his book Menot Levi on Megillat Esther, says that's why we give Mishloach Manot, because that's the tikkun of having been an am mifuzar mufarad. Lech knoset kol yidim, go and gather all the people, Esther says, and then afterwards, l'dorot, for future generations, give mishloach manot ish l'reyehu, and therefore create a situation of love and respect and brotherhood. Let's look at Rashi in source number 12. Rashi says, Dover Acher, Loshon Kor V'chom. Again, he gives three different interpretations to what the word Kor Chabederech means. Dover Acher, another interpretation, Loshon Kor V'chom. They chilled you in the desert. They made you cold. They cooled off your heat. Shehayu Kol, source 12. Shehayu Kol Ha'umot Yireim. All the other nations were afraid. Yireim from who? Afraid of who? Is it Yirat Hashem? Yireim li lachem bachem. Why? Because of the plagues and because of the splitting of the sea. All the other nations were afraid to fight with you. Ubazeh v'tchil v'hera makom acherim, and showed others that no, you can't fight. Mashal la'ambati rotachat. It's compared to a boiling hot bath. She'en kol bir yuchala lirei bitocha. No one can jump in. Ba ben bli'al, so somebody who has no fear of God whatsoever, echad, kafatz v'yored l'tocha, he jumps inside it, which is basically a suicide mission, he jumps inside it, afal pisha nichve, even though he'll get burnt, he kara, he chills it, he cools it off, ota b'pnei acherim, for others. So therefore, that everyone else had yirat Hashem, all the other nations were afraid of God. They were not going to start with the Jews. Amalek doesn't. And even to the point of self-sacrifice and killing himself or burning himself, he's willing to attack the Jews at this point just to show or to take away the air of invincibility. Therefore, you should not be surprised that in the last line of Rashi, he writes, Vayavo Amalek v'yiga baderech v'lo yirei Amalek Elohim. And they did not fear, Amalek did not fear God. So now you realize that Rashi's interpretation, that Lo Yirei Elohim is talking about Amalek, is consistent with his interpretation, the line beforehand, where he says everyone else, all the other nations, have fear of God at this point, no, love of God. All the other nations have fear of God at this point, but Amalek doesn't, and they have a strategy of this, and they even are willing to hurt themselves by doing this, and therefore it's Amalek who's Lo Yirei Elohim. Now, having said that, now let's go back to what we were up to, which was source number 6, which is the rush. The Lo Yirei Elohim, Pirish Rashi. Rashi explained, Amalek, the Lo Koi El Yisrael. He claims that it's talking about Amalek and not talking about the Jews. The Lo Yirei Elohim, Bimishkalot, Ulekach Nismacha Leparshat, Lo Yehe Bikischa. Now, so slow down a second because you have no idea what he's talking about. This comment of the Rush is in Devarim. In Devarim, he's concerned about the context over there and how things may flow. So if we look at chapter Kaf Hei, right, and by the way, it's interesting because there is a section right there in chapter Kafei, Parakafei, chapter 25, about brothers living together, about one brother dying, about the other brother taking responsibility for the family of the brother, which is very interesting that there are brothers over here as a background. And then it says, Lo yeb l'cha b'veitcha eifa ve'eifa. You don't have this. Lo yeb l'cha b'veitcha. Eifa ve'eifa. You should not have in your homes what's eifa ve'eifa? Two different measurements. Gdola uktana. Evan shlema v'tzedek yelacha. Eifa shlema v'tzedek yelach. Sorry, lach both times. Laman ya'arichu yamecha al adama asher Hashem elokecha noten lach. Fair business practices. And then it uses a very strong word. Ki to'avat Hashem elokecha kol se'ele. Because it's considered to be a to'eva. Rav Lichtenstein had a very interesting, he was quoted recently. Somebody's been interviewing him and posting it, and somebody, and he responded to the issue of homosexuality in the Orthodox community. And he says that in Orthodox community, people are very quick to point out that it uses the word to'eva in connection with homosexual behavior, and therefore, you know, people are toe-strong. He goes, but it's interesting, he uses the word to'eva also for bad business practices, and you don't find Orthodox Jews getting themselves all worked up about that. So he said, again, if you want to be consistent and say, you know, look at the word to'eva is used over here, so that's very strong language. God does not like bad business practices. Right after that verse, ki to'avat Hashem l'kecha kol ha'se'ele, what's the eile? Whoever does this, it's referring to somebody who has different weights, unfair business practices, kol osa'avil, whoever, you know, people treat in this, you know, unrighteous way. What's the next verse? Zachar et asher asa lecha Amalek. The very next verse is Amalek. So that's really where the rush is coming from over here. That's in Dvarim, Kafe. So therefore, the verses that lead into the story of Amalek, I'll explain. The story, the narrative that leads into the coming of Amalek to attack the Jews in Bishalach, in Shemot, is the whole thing with the water. We don't know water. Does God exist or not exist? Vayavo Amalek. The context of the story being told or retold or the commandment to wipe out Amalek, it comes right after a section of brothers living together and one brother not taking responsibility for the other, which, as I said, is quite interesting. And the next thing that comes up is unfair business practices and taking advantage of somebody in business, and that's labeled as a to'eva, as an abomination in God's eyes. And the next thing is, remember, you know what happens with Amalek. So therefore, the context of both are interesting, and the rush over here is pointing to the other context. V'lo yirei Elokim, look what he writes, b'mishkalot. Which means, if you do not fear God in terms of your weights, because again, who's going to know if your weights are a little off? Right? No one's going to know this. No one's going to catch you on this. So who's going to? So what does a business person need to have? He needs to have Yirat Elokim. But if you're not Yirei Elokim, if you don't have fear of God, then what happens? Vayavo Amalek. So over here, what the Rush is doing is he's talking about the Lo Yer Elohim is talking about the Jews. Ulakachnis machala parsha lo yebikitzcha. Vizel shemur chazal neimar morab b'mishkalot ulafisha lo kaimu amorab b'mishkalot. If you don't have the fear of God regarding your weights, tichtiv be v'yirat milokecha l'chein ba amalek. Right, and that's what it says. Miosnei mirmat toravat Hashem uktiv batrei ba bezadon v'yavo kalon v'gam ktiv ki tovat Hashem kol eila. Okay, the Malbim in source number 5 claims that the reason Amalek comes to fight goes against all logic of war. He says there's normally there's 5 different reasons for wars to take place between 2 different countries, and this does not fit into any of them. And he doesn't understand at all why the war should happen. Okay, let's go now over to source number 8. Source number 8 goes back to when Moshe says to Aaron, "Tzei, go out." So Tzei Hilachem B'Malek, Rabbi Yeshua Omer, and again, this is one of the many examples, which I don't know if I'm still counting or collecting, where the person, the Amora or the Tana who speaks is the same name as the biblical character who he's speaking about. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Amalo Moshe Li Yeshua, Tzei Mitachat Ha'anan, which is very interesting. Go out from this place of divine protection, Hilachem B'Malek, which means that Amalek only had the ability of attacking the people who were outside of God's protection. And now you just have to think a little bit more. Why would somebody be outside of God's protection? Because some reason somebody rejected God. Which means you have this Ananeya Kavod, which is theoretically protecting the camp. Yehoshua is firmly entrenched underneath the cloud, at least according to this Midrash. And Moshe says, go out. Remember the word go out. Look, Ibn Ezra, in a sense, is much easier. Ibn Ezra in verse 9 says, go out to fight Semi Machane Yisrael Ilachem Amalek. Go out of the Jewish encampment. Go back to source number 8, because it seems to be 2 opinions. Machar Nochi Nitzav, Mutar Va'omed, V'Rabbi Lezer Hamodei Omer, Machar Nigzer Ta'anit, Unehei Mu'atadin B'Schut Avot. That Rabbi Yeshua is focusing on Yeshua going out, which means go out from divine protection, which seems to be that the Jews are going to fight al piderach hateva, that they're not going to be using any kind of divine protection. Of course, what counters this? The fact that Moshe is going up on the mountain, and Moshe is praying on the mountain, and Moshe takes the staff with them on the mountain. So we have a tension over here. Rabbi Yeshua is focusing on Yehoshua is going out to fight in a natural way. And by the way, let's keep in mind, it's very possible, according to the way we read it, that Yehoshua is fighting today in a natural way before Moshe goes up to the mountain, because when's Moshe going up to the mountain? Only tomorrow. And Reb Elazar Modai is saying that when Moshe goes up tomorrow, there's going to be a fast, and he's going to daven, and what's he going to bring into the conversation? Zchut Avot. Basically, God, you promised to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov that these children are going to go into the land of Israel. You can't break your promise now, because you know we're in the middle of a path. The Jewish story can't end at this point, which is really a tension between these two different commentaries, between the zchut, what I would call the natural versus the supernatural. Although I can say that there's no contradiction. Why would I say there's no contradiction? Because one is what Yehoshua is doing, the other is what Moshe is doing, and that's, I think, very clear within the text. But it's again, it's also the Machar tomorrow hovers above us, and we'll keep that in mind as well.
Is only Moshe going to be fasting and praying?
So according to the Medrash, when Moshe starts to pray, that's what all the Jews who are not fighting, they all are going to watch Moshe, what he does. In a sense, Moshe lifts his hand, they all lift his hand. Moshe bows down, they're all going to bow down. Moshe shuckles, they're all going to shuckle. The Ramban quotes this and gives a very strong image of whatever Moshe does. He's setting an image for what the people does. I believe he quotes it from the Pirkei de Rabbi Elazar. Rashi in source number 10. Vitzehi lachem, remember, go out to fight. Se min ha'anan vilachem bos. Now you see that's what Rashi is incorporating, going out from the divine protection. Machar be'eta milchana amochi netzev. So Rashi clearly understands the machar, tomorrow is on Moshe. Bachar lanu anashim, giborim v'yirechet shetehe, schutan misayatan. Who are you going to pick? Strong people who have fear of sin, which means again, that tzadikim are going to go out to fight. Davar achar b'chod lanu anashim sheyudim levatel kshafim, which is a whole other thing which I didn't get into, that Amalek seems to have some kind of knowledge of magic, and there's a tension in Rashi, there's a tension in the Midrash, which way to go on this. Are we going to fight in terms of natural powers, or are we going to undo their magical powers by using people who themselves know magical powers? Look at the Targum Yonatan in Source 11, which will remind you of something we saw a number of weeks ago. It is. By the Egyptians who imitate...
No, but from the Jews' perspective.
I don't know how they perceived what Moshe was doing. Hopefully not just as magic. Shepakshu etchem bederech. Again, this is a translation of the verse in Dvarim. Remember, asher korcha bederech? So again, this is a Hebrew interpretation... Hebrew translation of the Yonatan. Shepakshu etchem baderech v'yahareg b'chem kol shayim aharher lustot me'acharei ma'amarei hima giborim mishevet shel beit dan shayav b'yideim avodah zarah v'hayahanan polet otam v'shel beit amalek mekabel otam. So he says, what is he describing over here? This is called ha'nechashalim. What does nechashalim mean? The week. Which week? The spiritual week. Which spiritual week? So he's claiming it's the hangers-on at the very end from Dan. We discussed this when we discussed the splitting of the sea. The Yizanev, they're the ones at the very end, and they're the ones who have the thoughts of Avodah Zarah with them. Again, we saw this in the discussion of splitting of the sea. And these are the spiritually weak who have been expelled from the divine camp, expelled from the Anane HaKavod. So therefore, if Yehoshua is going to go to war, basically to do what? To bring them back, right? Or to fight against Amalek. What is he going to have to do? He has to leave the cloud. Yes. Right. Okay. Going to our issue of Machar. Well, one second. Yeah, in source number 14, the Siftei Kohen points out that Machar says, Rachem Aleim HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The next day, God will have mercy. Yeah, of course, he doesn't point it out, but it's the same letters. Machar and Rachem. Okay, look at source number 20. Uma'amar Chazal ein ma'palato shel Amalek ela l'machar. That when it comes to tomorrow, now tomorrow I know that is a song from what's that from? No, I'm just saying that. From Annie. What? I expected more of you. Okay. Tomorrow is only a day away. Uma amar chazal in mapalatosh amalek ela machar. Amalek always falls tomorrow, which is a little depressing, because it's always tomorrow. Moshe amar machar anochi netzev. By the way, note how it quotes, no, tomorrow I'm going to go up. Uva haman lemachar ani karei l'Hashem. Ve'ester amara umachar e'eseh. Uva yalkut shimoni ester perikei. It makes this point about tomorrow. Okay, let's not read any further, but let's look at source number 18 now. You notice in 18, which goes back to the story of Esther, there, you know, Esther gathers them all together, and the king says, "What do you want?" Right? You do what I want. What does he say? What does she say? V'asot b'akashati yavo hamelech v'amanu l'mishta asher aser lahem. And tomorrow, I'll obey the king. But by the way, you realize the absurdity in this. You have this this paranoid, bloodthirsty King Ahasuerus, who has no hesitation at killing either one person or whole nations of people because of his fear and paranoia. And over here, including his wife, even though it never said that he killed Vashti, never says that in the text itself. Nonetheless, she says to him, he says, "Tell me what you want." And she says, "Tomorrow I will obey you." I mean, again, maybe we don't, as far as drama goes, if you're writing a story, it's great for drama. But she's putting her life in danger again. Just like she put her life in danger by going to see him, she's putting her life in danger again when she says, "Tomorrow I will obey you." Look at the way that she says it. Umachar ese kidvar hamelech. And tomorrow I will obey, what the king wants me to do. And afterwards, Haman gets all excited and he tells his wife and others, "Vegam lemachar ani karu." Right, tomorrow I'm going. Now, what's interesting about Haman? Haman wants immediate gratification. Haman can't wait for tomorrow. Haman, tonight. Tonight he needs to to settle everything. Tonight he needs to go run. Tonight he needs to put up the tree. Tonight he needs to kill Mordechai. Meaning he needs everything to be done immediately, which is interesting because it seems to be that's the way that you fight Amalek. And I want to go back to this machar. Can you imagine Amalek? And again, just battles in those days are not the same way as battles today. Battles in those days were face to face and. In order for them to fight, you have to go out to the field. You don't go out to the field, they have no one to fight. So therefore, Amalek picks off the last number of people in the group. They pick them off, so now the point is, we're all in our camp, and we're all safe. They're outside, we're inside. Certainly, if we're inside underneath the divine cloud, we're even safer. But either way, we're in our camp, we're safe. The only way they can fight is if we go out to fight them. So Moshe says, go out to fight them. Now, let's again... The machar, what did Isi ben Yehuda tell us? That we don't know which way the machar goes. Let's read it either the other way or both ways now. Let's say that Moshe says, okay, we'll go and fight them tomorrow. Can you imagine how upsetting that is for Amalek? They want to fight now. They're bloodthirsty. They got the war paint on and they're screaming and they're banging the drums and they're ready to fight now. He says, tomorrow. You could wait for tomorrow to fight. Now, for somebody who wants... their immediate, gratification. It's very difficult. And you see the difficulty that Haman has with it over here. Wait, you sense the difficulty that Haman has it over here because Haman can't. Haman gets manic, and Haman just goes doing what he needs to do. And again, he makes a mistake by going and visiting a paranoid king in the middle of the night to tell him that he wants to kill somebody. It is also not exactly using the best judgment, but that's part of that's part of the power of Haman. Haman is absolutely manic at this point. And that's what the Medrash and Esther is pointing out, is that this whole Esther approach of, okay, you know, tomorrow we'll do it. Tomorrow drives Amalek crazy. Tomorrow is how we defeat Amalek, is by pushing things off to tomorrow. Again, for all you who don't like procrastinating and you yell at other people for procrastinating. So here we find that the need to get something done immediately is a Haman perspective, is an Amalek perspective, and it's not so bad sometimes to put something off for tomorrow. By the way, even Matan Torah, remember Moshe says, okay, we'll add another day. God is ready to give. We'll add another day before we take it. We're okay at putting things off. Jews are late, it's okay. We're okay putting things off. We're okay delaying gratification. We're okay believing that there will be an Olam Haba and so on, and there will be Yemot HaMashiach. We're okay living our lives with great faith in the tomorrow, even though, you know, tomorrow always seems to be tomorrow, and a day away, and not today. But that seems to be something which, as I said, absolutely infuriates Amalek. And again, I want you to picture this battle. The battle is they're all there, ready to fight, on the field, ready to fight, and we're saying, okay, maybe tomorrow we'll come out and play. We're not ready for it. So again, that's why this machar becomes so critical. Does he send Yeshua out now to go and fight? Which says, no. Tomorrow we'll do everything. And I said, that machar is hanging on the balance, and that machar, Issi ben Yehuda told us, has no hachra'ah. The other thing that we saw, which was difficult, which means each text had a word or a phrase that we didn't know how to read. And the other one is Yirei Elokim. Now, again, I want to put things together a little bit. One, let's keep in mind. Okay, I'll read one more thing, and then I'll show you what we want to keep in mind. It's the Chizkuni in source 16. He makes an observation which I think we already accepted. Hanechesh shalim, hanechlashim. Mitevot hafuchot kmo ksavim ukvasim. There's sometimes in the Hebrew language that you have the same word, the same meaning, but the letters are mixed up. And the only thing that you have to ask yourself is, okay, so why mix up the letters? And I can't help that when I read this, and I read this, v'yizanev b'chachol hanecha shalim, I see the nachash there, and I see the zanav, and I see other, of course, you know, you can blame me for writing books called Echoes of Eden, and I see Eden in everything. But if it means the same thing, and it wanted to say chalash, should have said hachalashim, hanechlashim. It should not have said Hanechshalim. What I'm saying is that the Chizkuni is telling us that Nechshalim is the same thing as Chalashim, but the letters are inverted. So the only thing that happens when you invert the letters is that now you have the word Nachash in the very middle of it. Take a look at, oh, it doesn't have a number on it. After 15, before 16, there's a source that says Sefer Pitchei Sha'arim. Ulchein b'Rifidim, shesham k'tiv v'hikita batzur. That what happened by Rifidim, again, he's connecting it to the previous place. We're in source 15 and a half, between 15 and 16, right. Shesham derech nachash alitzur, which is a pasuk in Mishle. The way of the serpent by the tzur. But the tzur is the rock which is hit. Hayatzur haka'a b'mateh, shesham adivrim lo yusar Eved v'kativ sham v'yikra l'makom masa umriva al nesotam et Hashem limor hayesh Hashem v'kirmenu umayin v'hu besod eitz hadat tov v'ra. Is God with us or not? Is confusion. What is the source of all confusion according to the Pitchei Sha'arim? The source of all confusion is the eitz hadat tov v'ra. As far as he's concerned, the nachash is there very clearly. Continue. Sha'amdu al sod ha'bechira she'katav nechakor imhu b'rishut b'fnei atzmo chat v'shevelom olo.
Yesh, the Alma, the Ati,
ולכן כתב אחר כך ויבוא המלאק שתקף ונתאר הנחש הקדמוני. So he's saying is that Amalek, in his mind, very clearly, this is, by the way, one of the person who wrote this, Petrei Sharim, is one of the major explainers of the Kabbalistic teachings of the Vilna Gaon, Rav Yitzhak Eisenhower. And what he's explaining over here, and most of what he says here is based upon the Gra. So he's saying over here is the Mateh Elokim biyadi lafoch hanachash lemateh. It's that, why is he taking the staff with him when we're fighting Amalek? Because the staff, you can turn a serpent into a staff. That's why it's with him. Who is the serpent over here? The serpent over here is Amalek. Amalek represents the serpent. By the way, the serpent as well is the force that tells Adam and Eve back in the Garden of Eden, eat now, eat immediately, instead of waiting the next day for when it's the machar. What happens machar? Machar, it's Shabbat. Machar, we're allowed to eat from the Eitz Hadat Tovara, because it becomes Shabbat. The Eitz Hadat Tovara, according to the Zohar, is wine. Wine you use to make Kiddush on Shabbat. But if you get drunk on the wine for Shabbat on Friday, then you don't end up getting Shabbat, you end up getting confused. And over here, the problem is confusion. Where do we see confusion over here? Yesh Hashem, Bikurbeinu Mayim, is God with us or not? You see confusion. So he says the confusion immediately before Amalek comes is the confusion of the Eitz Dat Tov Hara. So the confusion of Eitz Dat Tov Hara, once the Jews are confused, what happens immediately afterwards? Vayavo Amalek. What's Amalek? The Nachash. Now the only thing he didn't say over here, that's HaNechashalim, which means that's why the word Nachash is over here. The Jews who are confused, right? The Jews who are confused are those, again, that we saw are associated with Shevet Dan, who have thoughts of Avodah Zarah. They're the ones who are going to end up becoming susceptible to this Nachash, to Amalek, and therefore the Eitz Hadat Tov Hara, and so on. And by the way, I, again, just in case you don't remember this, or when the Gemara asks, how do we know there would be a man like Haman? Haman min HaTorah B'nayin, it says, Hamin HaEitz HaZeh, from that tree, from the tree Eitz Hadat Tov Hara, that Haman is all about confusion. By the way, therefore we drink, Adeloyada, right? So we're no longer affected by the Eitz Hadat Tov Hara. Adeloyada. So we're no longer affected by the Eitz Hadat Tov Hara. Adeloyada ben Orham Ruvarach Mordechai. We're no longer confused. Adeloyada. We're no longer affected by this confusion of the Eitz Hadat Tov Hara, which is based upon the, what I just now said, based upon the Sfat Emet. Now, if we keep in mind one more thing, everything goes all the way back, at least the hatred, as we've seen, goes all the way back to source 22. V'yazid Yaakov nazid, v'yavo Esav min ha-sadeh v'hu ayef. By the way, it's interesting. When are we attacked? Kishanachnu ayef v'yageya. Who's ayef over here? Esav is ayef. V'yomer Esav Yaakov, haliteni na min adom adom hazeh. You know, why don't you give me to eat? Okay, sell it to me now, today. And again, Esav is very today oriented. I'm going to die. What do I need things for the future? You notice he keeps using the word kayom, because he's playing into Esav's way of looking at the world of things immediately. He needs the food, he needs it now. What's he willing to trade for it? He's willing to trade anything for it. Why would he hate the Bechorah? As we've already seen, the Bechorah was all future oriented. It involved 400 years of investment in terms of slavery, and then you get to collect, in the future, you collect all the reward for it. For Esav, this was the total antithesis of how he looks at the world. And Yaakov plays into this. I'll sell to you now, today. You get the food today. I sell to you today. You give me the Bechorah today. And the only question that comes up, are these good business practices? Was this a fair way of doing business? Which means, again, you follow the thing in Devarim, two brothers, one brother dies, the other brother taking care of the other brother's family. Chalitza, Yibum, so on. And then the business practices. To'eva, to act in an inappropriate way. And then vayavo amalek, ki lo yirei Elokim. And you get then this haunting question, or this impression. Again, Yaakov plays on Esav's weakness for Machar. He plays on it. Hayom, hayom. I need it now. I need the food now. Sell it to me now. Again, it all becomes very immediate. Again, you're dealing with somebody, immediate gratification. These things done right away. And again, we don't like to blame the avot. This is where the hatred comes from. Well, one of the places. Was this the right way to do this? Again, I'm throwing this out as a question. Was this the right way to do this? Does this look good? Was there a better way of doing this? Was there a better way of us getting the Bechora? Esav detested it anyway. Would Esav ever lived up to this kind of qualification? There seems to be a very interesting continuation. Unfair business practices, lack of fear of God, v'yavo amalek. So as I said, that's interesting just to watch the context in each of these sections. What did we do and what didn't we do? I can assure you... What? Right. What did we do? What didn't we do? What we did is we opened up both sections where the story of Amalek is written, and we read them both. By the way, this issue of Machar, of tomorrow, also takes place in the story of Shaul, who was supposed to kill them all today, but then waited for tomorrow. And there may not have been a very good thing what happened. I'm saying that the tomorrow aspect is there as well. This thing about tomorrow always, or today versus tomorrow, always seems to fit in when we're dealing with Amalek. And that's what the Midrash is catching on. What did we do? We opened up the two sections, we read them individually, and then to a certain extent we read them together. By reading together, we realized that a number of the Rishonim were doing the same thing, and they were using elements of one section to explain the other section, because ultimately they don't contradict, they tell us things. One thing about the other. What we've ended up uncovering in terms of the whole attitude is the need not just to read those two sections independently, and not just to compare them to one another, but also to look at the larger contexts of what happens before in each section. Because that may actually tell us a part of the story as well, certainly in terms of the words and the ideas which were unclear. There were two words which I think are the main words in each one which become the most interesting. The machar, the tomorrow, in terms of the first story. Do we fight them that day? Do we fight them the next day? Does Yeshua go today? Does Yeshua go tomorrow? When it comes to the other section, it's the Yirei Elokim. Who's the one that was not Yirei Elokim? Is it Amalek who's not Yirei Elokim? Or is it the Jews who are not Yirei Elokim? And you also see there, I would almost, you know, use the same words as Isi ben Yehuda over here, also say, I can read this both ways. Amalek is lo Yirei Elokim. And I asked you before, and you didn't give me my answer. I said, how do we know that it's Amalek who's not Yirei Elokim? How do I know it? How do I know it? Because in Bishalach, when it tells us the war against Amalek is a war of God, Milchama Hashem ba'Amalek. Why is God involved in this war? Right? I feel very strongly about it. It's Milchama Hashem ba'Amalek. God says, Ani emche, I'm going to do it. But later on, he says, now you do it. So who is it? God's going to do it, we're going to do it. So now we realize that our strength is when we have Yirat Elokim. And how is Yirat Elokim manifested? When we partner with God. When we partner with God, God uses us as the vehicle to fulfill His word. Which means us being with God is how we fight against Amalek. And when Amalek sees that we're not with God, then Amalek is able to fight against us. Which means the various interpretations over here, which are multiple interpretations, which you could have told me are mutually exclusive, I don't think are mutually exclusive. And I think that there's a way of using both interpretations, both it's Yeshua fighting tomorrow and Moshe going up to pray tomorrow. Both it's Amalek's lack of Yirat Elokim and our lack of Yirat Elokim. We don't have Yirat Elokim, Amalek is able to attack us. The Nechash Shalim, okay, you have to notice over there, the Nachash, the serpent, it's standing right over there staring at us. That's what we heard. So that's why Moshe takes the staff. Because we have the ability of taking every single nachash and turning it into a staff. We have the ability of controlling it. We have the ability of defeating against the nachash. But how does the nachash defeat us? When we get confused. We get confused in terms of Eitz Hadat Tov V'Ra. We get confused in terms of is God with us or not. When we have a lack of Yirat Elokim, we become susceptible. But lack of Yirat Elokim is not just that you don't go to shul. Lack of Yirat Elokim is also business practices. And that's very important. And that's a toiva. And we end up back having a lack of Yirat Elokim, even the way that we do business. That's the beginning of a slippery slope, which ends up being a rejection of God. And that's what you see within this context, within Devarim. And as I said, then it leaves us with this question. is this in any way a condemnation or attack against Yaakov and the way that it was taken? But you see that Yaakov knows everything I said about Machar. He knows Esav. He knows his brother. He knows that Esav needs something. He needs it now. He needs it immediately. And he plays upon that. And he gives him the food immediately. It's actually, even the food was raw, if you read it carefully. The food wasn't cooked, right? That's, I don't know if it's a real interpretation or not. I know that those who say it, because he says, Halitini na min adom adom hazeh. Does he say please? Or does he say give it to me while it's still raw? Halitini na min adom adom hazeh. So the word na can also be something not cooked properly. We see that by the Korban Pesach, the word na is used over there. By the way, this is interpretation. I originally heard from a cook, from a chef in a restaurant in Eucalyptus, and later on I saw one of the Rishonim say it. He was bothered because when lentils are cooked, they're no longer red. He says that when they're cooked, they're no longer red. So if it's Adom Adom Azeh, then it could not have been cooked. It'd have to be raw. But that's Esav. It's not even cooked yet. I still need it right now. So as I said, a chef said a very nice Dvar Torah. I later found one of the Rishonim saying it. So as I said, I think it's not enough just to read the Parsha Zohar, to read about the fight against Amalek. It also will say there's a chumrah. We don't want to get anyone upset. There's a chumrah that you should also understand it. So have a good Shabbos and have a good Purim and drink. Adi lo yada.